Okay, good evening, everyone. It's good to see you all on the Zoom and good to have Melissa here in person. Maybe perhaps some others will come, but I know it's Pesach is, I can't even say right around the corner. It's imminent. It is upon us. So Yasher Koach to all of you nonetheless for making time to be on, whether it's in person or on Zoom. It's still that's a monumental achievement to keeping our consistency. And God willing, next week as well, due to how Yom Tov falls out, next week also will be on Wednesday at 8 p.m. So, Bobby, I don't know if I sent that out in a separate email, but you could. I know you don't get the shul stuff, so you could just mark that down. Okay. All right. Good to see you, Bobby. Are you learning with us tonight instead of Zadie? Is that the plan?
He's on his way.
Okay. You'll take his place for now. Ishto kegufo, we say. The wife and the husband, they have the same status for certain areas of halacha. So why not? Okay. So good to see you, Melissa, Toby, Bubby, soon Zadie, hopefully, Paul, Gloria, Oliver, and I think that's Erwin on the phone. Okay, so if you guys want, I don't want to scare you, but it's not a good way to start off the year, right? But it's not. If glance at what we're up to tonight, we're on Yud Amud Beis, we are on 10B. Now you're going to notice it's huge. Look at all those words in the Gemara over there. And if you just keep turning and turning all the pages, you realize that until the end of the parak on 17a, on Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, welcome Zadie, you realize that there's a lot of words on each page. So here we have to plug in our general principle. Usually when there's a lot of words in the Gemara and no Tosfos, usually that's how it works out. That's why there's more room for the Gemara on the page. So that means generally it's more agadic. It requires less explanation, at least from a halachic standpoint. And so counterintuitively, when there's more words, generally it's easier from a conceptual standpoint. So we got a lot to read, but in actuality, it should go by very smoothly. So let me give you all the bird's eye view of what to expect this evening. Right now, the Gemara is just going to completely shift gears. We are going to start at the two dots. It's the fourth to last small line. It starts with Vayhi Bimei Achashverosh. We begin darshaning the Megillah, so to speak. And so we're going to talk about the significance of the word Vayhi, and it was. Then we're going to have a few more miscellaneous teachings from Rabbi Levi. And then following that, the latter half of what we'll be learning this evening will be how each sage, how each rabbi opened up his discourses on the Megillah. I'll explain more what that means when we get to it. So that's what we're looking at over here. We are actually going to pivot away from the halachic discussion and talk more about darshaning the significance and what the hidden gems are in the Megillah. So at least we knew the halachos going into Purim for the most part. And now these drushos, you'll just have to remember for Purim next year. Okay. It was bound to happen that we wouldn't get everything in before Purim. Okay. So everyone found the place. We're good. Yud Amud Beis, Vayhi Bimei Achashverosh. Okay. Vayhi Bimei Achashverosh. Amar Rabbi Levi. The Itim Rabbi Yonasan. We have a tradition from the men of the great assembly that that whenever you look in Tanakh and it starts off with the word vayhi and it was, that is a negative lashon. It has a negative connotation. It means that what I'm about to tell you, things were not so fine and dandy during those days. And what do we use to back up that assertion? Vayhi bimei Achashverosh, hava Haman. And it was in the days of Achashverosh. Yeah, pretty rough. We had Haman. Vayhi bimei Shvod HaShoftim, as in days when the judges judge. I think that's the beginning of Rus. Yeah, someone want to confirm that? Beginning of Rus? Yes, right at the beginning of Rus. Hava Rav, there was a hunger in the land, right? That's why they left initially. So, and it was when man began to multiply more, and God saw that in their when they multiplied in quantity, they also multiplied in terms of their evil as well. So it was when they traveled from the east that they said, let us build a city. And they built Migdal Bavel, the Tower of Babel. And we all know how that ended up. Vayihi Amraphel. It wasn't the days of Amraphel. Well, they had a war back then. So that's very clearly war is bad, in case you didn't know. We talked about this at the beginning of the Masechta. And it was when God was with Yoshua, God sent an angel, and the angel had a sword drawn out. Remember we talked about this? Anyone remember why we talked about this early at the beginning of the Masechta? A little bit of Chazara, some trivia. So I'll tell you how this came up earlier. This came up earlier because we were talking about which mitzvahs supersede which mitzvahs. So we asked, you know, if the mitzvah of Megillah comes up, then it's said that everyone stopped learning Torah. But we talk about, well, maybe there's a difference of an individual learning Torah versus the Torah learning of the tzibor, a public Torah learning. And so we brought in the story of Yehoshua and how he neglected to study Torah and the angel was about to kill him for it as a proof. So just connecting the dots for us. Vayihi Hashem es Yehoshua, vayimalu b'nei Yisrael. So when God was with Yehoshua, the Jewish people committed an act of me'ilah, right? Remember me'ilah, what that word means? It came up more in Makos than Megillah, really, but I think it came up more. Me'ilah is, I guess, sacrilege might be the best translation. It's when something is consecrated and you use it for davar chol, for secular, non-holy purposes. By he, so that they, I think they broke the ban. I think that's what it's referring to. So it was that there was this one man from Ramasayim, this referring to Elkanah, and well, it wasn't such a fine and dandy time because one of his wives, Tana, who he dearly loved, she was barren. And it was when Shmuel became old, what's so bad about him becoming old? That happens to everyone. So, but it was that his children did not go in his ways. Right, so that's like one of the earliest instances where you have what we call in the yeshiva world, the Rebbe son syndrome, which is like I've talked about this many times, where the Rebbe just focused so much on his bachurim, but not enough on his actual children, that unfortunately sometimes children don't get enough attention. They go off the derech, and they dubbed it Rebbe son syndrome. Okay, Ben Kamak Maharech. By he David lechol derachav maskil v'ashem imo. So right, and by he shol. What's that? Oyein es David. By he shol oyein es David. It's not a word you see every day. And Shol began to like a lashon of ayin, an eye. Shol began to look. He began to look at David with an evil eye, the ayin hara, if you will. And so it was a bad thing. Even though David things seem dandy, but he indicates, look a little later, and you'll see that Shaul was not so happy with David. By he, Kiyoshav Amel would be so, when the king was sitting in his house, David got the bad news that he was not allowed to build the Beis HaMikdash, he'd have to be his son. But okay, fine. So there we go. Those are all of our proofs. What do we see from here? That each and every instance that we mention, that the pasuk begins with the word by he, it's an indicator that something bad is going down. So, we know things were brewing pretty badly for the Jews, but there are other instances in Tanakh as well. However, there are other places in Tanakh where the word Vayihi is used, and it's not so obvious that it is a negative indicator. But Siv, Vayihi b'yom hashmini, so on the eighth day, when they were consecrating the tabernacle, the Mishkan. Utanya osa yom haisa simcha v'nei HaKadosh Baruch Hu kiyom shenivru bo shemayim v'aretz. What do you mean by he has a negative connotation? It says in the Braisa that on the eighth day, which has the word by he, God was so happy, he had the same simcha kiviyachol as he was when he created heaven and earth. So you want to tell me by he is negative? And right, so tziv hacha v'ayhi v'yom hashmini, uksiv hasam v'yiboker yom echad. So we see that just as creation is positive, so too v'yhi v'yom hashmini is positive. So we could brush that one off. We could refute that. Hashem nadav avihu. yes, it was a happy time, but what's the Vayihi come to indicate? It's indicating to us to look a little further. And even though it should have been a fully joyous day, Nadav and Avihu brought the Esh Zara. They brought that weird carbon to Hashem and they died. And so there was a damper on the day. Okay, we reject that. But here's another question. So that is, right, so it was when there was 480 years. This is in the context of, this is in Malachim. So this is when Shlomo builds the base Hamikdash. Very good. So that's a joyous time. You can't dispute building the base Hamikdash is not a sad time. But Ziv, and likewise, another question, when Yaakov saw Rachel, that was a joyous moment. So why is Vayhi negative? But Ziv, finally, so they got the first, the second, the third day, etc. of creation. It said, Vayihi. And you're going to say creation was a negative thing that we were created? Actually, I mean, I think we could refute that because there's a dispute between Shammai and Hillel, Beishan and Beisil, about whether it was good for man to have been created to begin with. So I think some of the first deal with this that maybe there's a dispute if it was good for man to have been created, but the creation of the world was objectively a positive act. So, all right, footnote over there. Point being is, we have a few case in points where, cases in point, I should say, where we see that Vayihi has a positive connotation. So how do we make sense of this? Rav Ashi, let me rephrase what I said earlier. Kol Vayihi ikahachi v'ikahachi. Yes, Vayihi can go either way. But when it says Vayihi b'mei, and it was in the days of Eino El Lashon Tsar. When it says Vayihi b'mei, that is has a foreboding tone to it. And here are our examples. Chamisha Vayihi b'mei hava. There are five instances in Tanakh where it says Vayihi b'mei. Vayihi b'mei hafashverosh. When the judge is judged, by Hebe May Amraphel in the days of Amraphel's reign, by Hebe May Achaz, by Hebe May Yoyakim, as well as those kings' reigns as well. Those were old times of upheaval, negative things. And so we see, by Hebe May is negative. So it says, by Hebe May Achashverosh, we know things were not too good. And that brings the end of this section of the Gemara. Let me pause for a moment. Do we have any questions? Okay, like I said, conceptually mostly straightforward. Of course, there's always room to go deeper into the Agadita, but I think we got it.
I've got a question.
Oh, we do have a question. Thank you, Zayn.
Yes. If the creation of the world is a positive thing without the creation of man, why create the world if the world wasn't created for man?
But your thing is, why would the creation of the world be positive if it wouldn't be positive for man?
Is that the question? The world was created for man. So if the creation of man is questionable on positive, negative, why is the creation of the world absent man positive? Because there's a lot of cruelty between wild animals, prey animals, and hunting animals.
Yeah. Yeah, that's. I remember there was David Attenborough, I think is his name. He's the narrator for BBC's whatever the BBC version is of Animal Planet. So I remember he did a narration one time of What a Wonderful World, and it shows like all the peaceful things of the birds and the swans and all these animals. But I'm thinking to myself as I watch this video, it makes everything look so serene. I'm thinking like, yeah, but you know, it doesn't show like that snake that ate the rat and all the nastier parts of creation. So I think this ties into a question some of the Achronim bring up, which is, wait a minute, if we wanted a case in point of Vayihi being positive, why did we first go to these other examples? Why not start all the way from the beginning of the Torah? We almost bring it in as a second thought. So it seems that maybe Chazal were struggling with that idea of whether the Vayihi in creation was actually a absolute positive. They weren't so certain about that. And that's why it's brought in as a second thought. Because you think about chronologically, like the first, when I was reading this Gemara, the first Vayihi that came to mind for me was the Vayihis at the beginning of creation. So why did the Gemara invoke those first? So possibly because it wasn't so clear to Chazal that those were so positive, perhaps for the reasons, Zaidi, that you raised. Okay?
But if the Torah says, and it was good,
yeah,
then what's to argue? I mean, if God says it was good, it was good.
Yeah. Well, what's the good going on? You know, what's the nature? Okay, no, I hear. Good points. It's a good point. All right. So the Gemara is going to do what it does, which means many times we will bring in a particular rabbi to teach us something that's pertinent to our discussion. And once we bring him in, we say, you know what? You know, it's like, you know, you bring in a scholar in residence for a particular topic. It's a hot topic. You want to be addressed. And then I'm like, okay, but you realize like he also has to speak like between Mincha Marv and Shal Shudas. So he just like pulls out a random topic. So that's kind of what we're doing over here. His main presentation's over, but Rabbi Levi has a few other ideas up his sleeve. And so the Gemara wanted to give him a little room to share those with us. And then we'll get back to our feature presentation. So none of these are particularly relevant to the Megillah, but they are Torah. Lamdani Torah. Here we go. Ve'amar Rabbi Levi, davar zeh misoras b'yadeinu, mavoseinu. Once again, Rabbi Levi is sharing with us things that he has a tradition for. Another tradition that we have from our forefront. Now, interesting, earlier he said we have a tradition from the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, the men of the Great Assembly. Now he's just saying I have a tradition from our fathers, which sounds a little less authoritative, but I haven't looked into the difference in language. I'm just noting it. Amots v'amatia achim hachim. So Amots and Amatia, they were brothers. The Gemara says, Shkoyach, my Kamash Mulan. Who cares? You know, it's like, Sadie, don't pass it along to mom. I hope she's not standing in the room. Like my mother will start explaining to me, oh, your father's cousins related to this uncle, to this cat, and then this, and, you know, whatever. And I'm like, okay, Shkoyach, family tree. You know, it's like, I don't need to know, like, oldest trivia. So,
like the expression we had in Vietnam, don't mean nothing.
Very good. So the Gemara is like, Shkoyach, Mike Kamashal, who cares if they're brothers? So the answer is, you want it to convey something significant. It's not just random trivia. Ki hadam or Shmuel bar Nachmini Amar Rav Yochanan, kol kashi tznua bebeis kamiya zocha veyotzu meyana malachu nevi'im. That any young bride who is modest in her father-in-law's house, and basically is modest, it's sneas in general, she will merit to have kings and prophets come from her line. So minalan, where do we see this in the Torah, that such a blessing is given to a modest woman? Mi Tamar. We learn from Tamar in the story of Tamar and Yehuda, or in modern Orthodox, we call it Tamar, but I'm just going to pronounce it traditionally. I just want to make sure you understand. Desiv. Vayar Yehuda vayashavel lezona kichisa paneha. So it says, and Yehuda saw that she covered her face, and so therefore he thought that she was a prostitute. The Gemara has mishum dechasas dechisa paneha vayashavel lezona. What? Because she covered herself, he thought she was a zona, a prostitute? Like, I would say, what do you mean? Like, she's more tznius because she's covered up. So why would he think that because she's more tznius that she's a prostitute? So rather, what's it coming to tell us? That since she covered her face, kind of, I guess the way I think of it is like the burqas that you see the Arabs wearing in the Middle East, that basically covers everything up until the eyes. So he never really knew what she looked like when she was in her father-in-law's house, in Yehuda's house. And so, you know, this reminiscent of how Avraham Avinu didn't know that Sarah was beautiful until they're ready to go down to Mitzrayim. It's reminiscent of that. So what we see from here is that she was very modest, that she always covered herself properly. And so therefore she merited to have kings and prophets come from her. How do we see that? Malachim David. So Amatzia is from the Davidic line. So that's easy. Amatzia, therefore, David comes from Tamar. And Yehuda, And Amatzia comes from the Davidic line. So Amatzia comes from Tamar. So that check number one, kings come from her. Nevi'im, where do we know that prophets came from her line? Dari Levi, this goes back to what he taught. Misoris Be'adim Avasenu, Amotz Amatzia, Achim Hayu. We know that Amotz and Amatzia were brothers. Uksid, Chazon Yishayahu ben Amotz. And we know that Yishayahu was his son, since Amotz and Amatzia were brothers, and Yishayahu is the son of Amotzu, and Yishayahu is a prophet. So Yishayahu comes from Tamar's line as well. And because Tamar was such a great tznius woman, therefore she benefited to have kings and prophets come from her line. End of that idea. One more idea from Rabbi Levi, and then we get back to our feature presentation. Bara Levi, Dover Zemesurus with the Mamasainu, Malcolm Aron Eno Min Hamida, that the Aron did not have a physical space that it occupied inside the Beis HaMikdash. Tananami Hachi, and we have a Bryce that supports this. Aron Sha'asa Moshe Yishal Eser Amos L'chol Ruach. So the Aron, between the Aron and the walls, there were 10 Amos separating on each side. Uksiv Lufnehad Vir Esrim Ama Orech. And so we know that there was from one side to the other was 20 Amos. So the issue is, and we know Ama right, and width as well. Uksiv Kanafa Kruvachad Eser Amos, Kanafa Kruvachad Eser Amos. The wing of one angel was 10 Amos, and the wing of the other was also 10 Amos. So the issue is, mathematically, the Aron would basically be occupying the room. So how can the Aron occupy the space in the room while also maintaining that there is significant space of 10 Amos between the Aron and the walls? So the answer is, Aron Gufa Hecha Havakai, where'd the Aron go? Elash Raminab and Isayomed, it defied the laws of physics, and the Aron somehow occupied space while not occupying space, kind of like a Schrodinger's Aron, which actually makes sense because no one ever really looked in there. It was only the Kohen Gadol went in on Yom Kippur. So it's kind of like a Schrodinger's Aron. It's not there and there at the same time because no one's looking at it. So there's your quantum physics today, guys. Torah Ramada. Okay. Now back to our feature presentation. So what we are going to do now is just a little bit understanding about how rabbis give drushes. I was very... I got a very big compliment from my drasha last week. You can see what I mean. Chaim Bergman, a young guy who moved in recently, he goes to 8 o'clock chakras. So he was joking to me a few weeks ago. He's like, yeah, you know, every YU rabbi has a standard formula for their sermon. There's like, you say, I saw in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, and that's your hook. And then you connect it. Yeah, like he had a spiel. So, you know, they teach you always to start a sermon with a hook. So he came over to me last week. He's like, there was no hook. You just went straight to the Torah. I'm like, oh, thank you. You know, so sometimes like we try to force a hook in. So anyway, nowadays, what's the hook that we use to reel people in? Wall Street Journal, New York Times article, or a movie reference, or a sports reference. Back in the day when the great sages needed a hook to start off their drush shows, only, like if they were darshaning Megillat Esther, what was the hook? They pulled out a random pasuk from somewhere else in Tanakh, seemingly random, and they tied that pasuk into Megillas Esther. So they didn't need to use the New York Times. They needed to use the latest Marvel movie or sports, whatever. But you know, this was their madriga that they were on. And so you'll see exactly what I mean. We're going to see how every rabbi hooked his audience when he was beginning his discourse on the Megillah. So here we go. Rav Yosef Pasukla Piskal Hai Parashta Mehachim. Bekamti Alehem, Bechrati Lebavel Shem Shar Unim Unechem Um Hashem. So God says, I came upon them and I cut off Bavel, their name, relatives, Nin Benechem, which are all different words for posterity, for future generations, for grandchildren. So it seems to be a superfluous amount of words to say God's destroying them. So what does each word come to convey? Shame, zahaksav, is refers to their written language. Shar, zelashon, refers to their spoken language. Nin zem malchus, that refers to their dominion. Uneched zo Vashti, and in terms of any future generations of Bavel, Vashti was a came from the ruling line of Babylonia, of Nebuchadnezzar, and so she was destroyed as well, based on the pasuk. You see what he did there? Seemingly random pasuk, ties it into the Megillah, and that's how he started off his drasha. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, pasuk lai piskalai parash mehacha. Now the next one, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, he opened up this way. I believe that's the Haftorah that we do on Tainit Sibor, if I'm not mistaken. So So instead of a thorn, a cypress tree will come up. So Tachas Haman Harasha. We'll talk about this later on in the Gemara. Later on in Megillah, we'll talk about how Haman deified himself. He treated himself as an Avodah Zarah. He made everyone bow down to him. And we see that the thorns, sometimes the symbolism for Avodah Zarah in Tanakh. So that refers to Haman, who treated himself as Avodah Zarah. So instead of Haman, who we have? Yala Barosh, Zeh Mordechai. Barosh refers to Mordechai, Shnikra Rosh Lechol Absamim. For Mordechai was considered, he's referred to as the top of the pack in terms of incenses, spices. Shnemar Vata, Kachlecha Absamim Rosh, Mor Deror. And now what's Mor Deror in Aramaic? Matargaminon, Mori Dachi. Mor, you see that? Mordechai. So Mordechai is the best to sum him. So that is referring to the Rosh. He's the top of the pack. Tachas Sarpad, in lieu of the Sarpad, which I checked it up, that means a nettle. Anyone know exactly what a nettle is? Some kind of not so desirable plant, is my understanding. All right, I guess we could Google image it. Something not desirable.
Weed.
It's a weed. Okay, makes sense.
But like right. A spice on it, I think.
What was that?
I put spikes on it.
Ah, well, that makes sense. It's similar to a thorn. So it's there's a parallelism there. Very poetic. So Tachas Sarpad, that's where we're up to, right? Tachas Sarpad, so Tachas and Vashti are Russia, Bas Moshe Nuchanetz are Russia, Jesarap Rafidas Beis Hashem. So instead of Vashti, who is descended from Nebuchadnezzar, who destroyed the abode of God, Desiv Rafidaso Zahav. So what we see over here is that the word sarpad, I guess if you play around, it's like a real poetic license over here, that sarpad is like samach, interchangeable with a sin, and so it's a rashe tevos for shesaraf refidas beis Hashem. Anyway, it refers to Vashti. That's Vashti for you. Yala Hadas. And finally, the Hadas, this is the easiest one, Zo Esther. This refers to Esther HaTzadekes. Shenikras Hadasa Shnemar Bahi Omein Es Hadasa Bahila. Fine, Es Hadasa. So Mordechai adopted Hadasa. Hadasa is Esther. And so Hadasa takes Vashti's place. Then Vahayla Shem L'Shem. Zo Mikra Megillah, this refers to Mikra Megillah, La'os Olav, for an eternal sign. This teaches Aloi Kares, Elu Yimei Purim. These are the days of Purim. And this is one of the important sources that tells us how Purim is and the Megillah are eternal. And we had a whole Scott Resonance Shir with Simi Peters, I remember, about the eternality of the holiday of Purim. So rather than me go into it here, we should have a recording. So if anyone is interested in that topic, we'll send it to you. Okay. Moving on. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Pasul Epistolai Parash Mehasa. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi opened it up with the following. Vaya Kasher. Oh, so this is our, so here's our tie-in for Pesach, Rabosai. And one to two of the shiurim I will be giving over Pesach will actually be building off this Gemara. V'haya kasher sas Hashem aleichem leitiv estem. Kain yosis lahara estem. Right? This is toward the end of the Sefer Devarim, I believe. Let's take a look. Yep, I'm correct because I remember. Devarim, chapter 28, Perek Chav Ches. Because I remember when we were finishing our Bible from the beginning, this came up. So it says that just as God rejoiced when he bequeathed goodness to you, so too he will rejoice to bring evil upon you when you're deserving of it. Does God rejoice in the downfall of the wicked? What word is missing when they sang praise to God? Why did they only say, Hodol Hashem ki lo chasto? They should say, Hodol Hashem ki tov ki lo lam chasto. So the answer is, Lefi she'ena kadosh baruch hu sameach mimah palasin shel rishayim, because God does not rejoice in the downfall of the wicked. V'arav Yochanan, my d'siv, lo kar zel zekol laila, they didn't come close to each other at night. Bikshu malachi ashrayis lomar shira, the malachim, the ministering angels, desired to constitute themselves into a choir and to sing as the Egyptians were drowning. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Ma'asei Yadai Tovim Hayam Atem Shira. My creations are perishing, they're drowning in the sea, and you're going to sing Shira? Point being is, we see that God does not rejoice when the evil, when the wicked have to be punished. Kavachomer, God would not rejoice when the Jewish people, his children, need to be punished. So how can it say in the pasuk in Devarim there that God rejoices when he has to bring evil upon us? Samar Rabbi Elazar, apparently he knows some diktuk that I'm not so good at, but he fills it in for us. Hu eino sas avachir mesis. He himself, God, does not rejoice. But what does the word mean? It means that he's mesis. He causes others to rejoice. Meaning God does not rejoice when he brings vengeance upon the wicked, certainly not when he has to do discipline and punish the Jewish people, but happens to be when he punishes the Jewish people, those who are the enemies of the Jewish people will consequently rejoice as a result. Had said Yasus, that would imply God himself celebrated. Since it says the word Yasis, it indicates that he causes others, or he creates the circumstances in which others can rejoice. So you can imagine this Gemara is very important. I'm not going to give you the whole shiur right now, but as a general question, I remember when Osama bin Laden died, was killed, he was assassinated. So there was, every rabbi was like giving the shiur back then about do we rejoice over the downfall of the wicked? Because remember, after he died, everyone was in the streets chanting USA, USA, and you know, we were very excited that he died. So the question is, is it appropriate to celebrate the death even of a wicked person? Or should we frame it as we're never happy when anyone has to die, but we are thankful that a threat has been neutralized and that we are now safer as a result? Or can we take it to the next level and say, you know, that insert expletive deserved it. And you know what? He deserved every single bit of punishment that he got. So that year we will be dealing with, God willing, in some iterations in between Mincha and Marav on the first days of Pesach during my speaking slot. And then presumably I'll be asked to speak to Mincha and Marav on the last days. We'll deal with that question from a different angle once again. So this is a very critical Gemara, and we're not having Monday night Shiurim for the next week. So it won't be a Monday night Shiur. You'll just have to actually come to Shul and hear it if you can. All right. And if not, then it's a Shiur next year. Okay, so there we go. That's the end of that Gemara. What was the point of bringing this all in? So we brought this all in because this was a time when the Jewish people were suffering and God was about to bring evil upon the Jewish people. God brings evil in the end. He brings punishment. He brings justice upon Haman and all those who want to kill us. And so this discourse is very relevant for Purim, but I like it. Hashgacha Pratis would have it that the Gemara talks about Pesach here as well. By the way, why is this Gemara important halachically? This will be my shir. Why is this Gemara important from a halachic standpoint, not just from a theological standpoint. Anyone know? So if you look at the Beis Yosef commentary on the Torah, he's the author of Shulchan Aruch. He says, you guys ever notice that for Sukkos, we say full hallel throughout the entire Sukkos. But on Pesach, after the first days, we no longer say full hallel. We only say chatzi hallel. The Beis Yosef quotes this Gemara and says, this is the reason that we don't say a complete hallel during the rest of Pesach. Because how can we fully rejoice knowing that the Mitzrayim were suffering? And it's a similar idea tie into the taking the wine out when we talk about all the makos. But very briefly, this is Gemara and Erechin. It says, actually, we don't need a darshan this. The Gemara and Erechin says it's a technicality. It's just about the karbanos. It has to do with the difference in karbanos between Sukkos and Pesach. And so for a completely technical reason, I believe because there's no distinction in karbanos, therefore there wasn't anything new, anything special, so we didn't say a full hallel on Pesach. So basically, just to know without going through the full shiur, if a rabbi ever gets up and gives a sermon and quotes the Gemara as dispositive that one cannot celebrate when the wicked are destroyed, just note that it's not so obvious, and there are Gemaras with opposite implications. One last source to think about, the blessing of V'lam al-Shinim and Shmona Esrei against heretics. There's slightly different versions, but the one we have is not just a prayer to wipe out wickedness, but actually to wipe out the wicked as well. So we have conflicting ideas in our tradition on this. Anyway, let's get to the conclusion here. Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, Pasuk Pesach. How did Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana start his lecture on Megillah? Someone who's good before God, God gives him Chachma Das and Simcha. This refers to Mordechai Tzadik. And to the wicked, he gives him the proclivity, to gather. This refers to Haman, who couldn't have enough. He always wanted more. And his destiny is to give it to those who are good in God's eyes. Zeb Mordechai ve Esther. This refers to Mordechai and Esther. The Siv, Batasim Esther is Mordechai El Beis Haman. Because what happened was, Haman kept gathering in and consolidating power. But at the end of the day, all of his riches and wealth went to Mordechai. Next, Rabbi Bar Ofer and Patsalei Hispani Parashim Dehacha. Next one. Vesavdi Kisi Be'ilam. So I placed my throne in Elam, which is where Shushan was, where the story of Purim took place, and I destroyed from there the king and officers. Mavso Vashti, Mav refers to the destruction of Vashti. Usarim, so Haman Vaseres, and officers, refers to the downfall of Haman and his 10 sons. I once saw there was like this comic actually about Haman's 10 sons. So it shows all of Haman's it's an Israeli comics. I forgot the precise formulation. You see these 10 sons hanging. And then one of the women says, the Shod HaKotel, Women of the Wall. She's like, what's this? 10 men hanging? Not a single woman is being hanged on here? So I got a kick out of that one. Okay. Rav Dimi Bar Yitzhak, Pasuk La Piskel Ahai Parashita Mehaka. We're almost at the end. We're turning to the next page. Rav Dimi Bar Yitzhak, he would open up his discourse as follows. Ki avadim anachnu, for we are servants. V'oseinu lo azavnu Eloheinu, and even though we were in servitude, we still did not forsake our God. V'yetalinu chesed v'nemalachei pras, and God therefore gave instruction. He directed the kings of Persia to do kindness with us. Okay, Amosai, when does this refer to? Bisman Haman. This is referring to the time of Haman when God finally, through Esther, was able to change the mind of Achashverosh. We're just going to go slightly further, and then we'll conclude. Rechanina bar papa pasach la piskalai parshim hacha. Rechavta enosh, you've mounted this man, this mortal man upon us, the Rashenu. So, right, banu be'ishu amayin, and we came in fire and water. What's that mean, fire and water? Ba'esh Nebuchadnezzar, through fire, was in the time of Nebuchadnezzar, when he, I think it's referring to the story of the martyrs who went into the fire, Nebuchadnezzar, Russia, Ubamayim b'mei Paro, Batotzinu l'Ravaya b'mei Amma. Ubamayim refers to the waters, the Nile, in the days of Paro in Egypt, and Batotzinu l'Ravaya b'mei Amma. And you brought us out, the Rivaya, this is the same word, I believe, as Kosi Rivaya in Psalm 23, my cup overfloweth. And so when were we brought to this overflowing, abundant nature during the days of Haman when we were rescued from it? One last one. You're going to pass the episcopal parashah mehacha. Zachar chasav v'manosu the basis straw ro kolasi arz esi shuas lekeno. God remembered his chesed and his faithfulness to the Jewish people, and all the people of the earth were able to witness the salvation that God brought. Amosai, what salvation is this referred to that everyone saw? Amosai wrote called Say Aretz and Sheshuas Elakenu, Bimei Mordechai Esther. During these Mordechai and Esther, everyone around the world heard the news, if not witnessed the news about the Jewish people's salvation. So next time when we start next week, remember Wednesday 8:00 p.m. God willing, we will continue with these. The Gemara will continue with these introductions. Now, one question I just want to raise, and this will be my shiur between Mincha and Maariv, probably on the second day of Pesach, between Mincha and Maariv. So the last, between Mincha and Maariv speaking, Slan and Yontif. But don't worry, if you're not there for it, if there's enough of you who aren't there for it, then I might be willing to shiur it at the beginning of our next shiur. The question is, I remember we talked about killing Amalek during the time of, we talked about during Purim time. So the question is, if someone's really from, like, let's say, for argument's sake, you know with that someone is from Amalek. So you have a mitzvah to kill them. I love this question. The question is, do you make a bracha? That's a question that's raised.
Bracha achorna.
Bracha achorna. So yeah, is it bracha fanatic? Okay. Anyway, this is why I love Chashuk Yechanan. So Zilberstein says this might be dependent on how we answer the question: why don't we make a bracha on Parsha Zachor? We just read Parsha Zachor not too long ago. I hope we were there, or we heard it somehow, or read it somehow. So why don't we make a bracha, a special bracha on Parsha Zachor? So one answer given, he gives 8 different answers, but I'll give you the one that's relevant directly to our Gemara. Because it says, even though there's a mitzvah to kill Amalek, since it's a destructive act, it's not something that we make a bracha on because we don't want to celebrate it. Similar to how we don't celebrate the fact that the Mitzrayim had to die. They had to die. It was a necessity. But it's not something that we are exuberant about. It's not something that we're popping open the champagne all about. So therefore, here as well, it's something we do because we're obligated to do so. We are required to do so, but it's not something that we do besimcha. You're not like if do Hashem besimcha, and then like kill him. That's not what we're doing. So therefore, that's one of the reasons offered why we don't make a bracha on Parsha Zachor. And perhaps it would be the same reasoning as well for why we don't make a bracha on killing Amalek. If this topic interests you, there are 7 other answers that we could deal with another time, Kathleen.
Rabbi, I'm just not sure I fully understand the question. When you say we don't make a bracha on Parshas Zachar, you mean that if somebody gets called up for that aliyah, they don't say a bracha when they get called up to the Torah?
Very good, Toby. That's answer number 8. Answer number 8 is well, usually when I do a mitzvah, right?
Aliyah. Wait, you're breaking up, and I want to hear.
Okay, can you hear me?
Now I can.
Okay, good. I'm on the show Wi-Fi, so it should be good. but as we know, okay. So on the Tilos Lulav for Lulav, you make an Achilas Matzah for Matzah, right? So you don't just make a Hamotzi Lechem in Haaretz when you eat Matzah and say, right? There's an Achilas Matzah as well that you make. And right. So in addition to the standard bracha, generally when something's unique, a unique mitzvah, you make an additional, you make a special Birchas HaMitzvah. So the question is, why don't we make a special Birchas HaMitzvah on a mitzvah doraisa of Parsha Zachor? So one of the final answer, number 80, gives is what you said, which is the Birchas HaTorah that we make beforehand is the Birchas HaMitzvah on it. Now,
so you do say the bracha when you get called up to the Torah.
What was that?
So you do say the bracha when you get called up for that parsha. Okay.
Yeah, it's a maftir, the same way.
I was there. I was wondering, like, did I miss something that he didn't say it or okay?
Well, you know, it's interesting though. But we read it after davening. Also, we don't make any bracha on it. So it's I don't know if that answer works. Right, because remember, yeah, we don't make a bracha on it when we just read it outside of the context of davening, outside of Kriyas HaTorah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Rabbi, I have a question.
Yes.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
After the Egyptians drowned, and in the Shira, they sang, and the women danced, and they were very, very happy. So I don't understand... They were allowed to be happy, then we have to make up for it by not saying Hallel during complete Hallel during most of the Pesach.
Because they were happy over their immediate salvation. They weren't necessarily focusing on the death of the Egyptians.
I realize that we will definitely say that. I mean, the Gula is the key word. Nevertheless. Something happened. They, you know, they it couldn't be just
right.
So it's
a good question that you raise, which is why were the Jews? We have us Yashir, and the angels are not allowed to say, but we were allowed to. So yeah, one of the main answers given is what Toby said, which is we were the ones who were saved, so it's appropriate for us. But for a third party, which has no stake in the matter. You know, why are you butting into this and taking a side and celebrating? It's understandable for us to, and you know, and then also you could, there's what to be a chalik. What did the angels want to sing? The angels want to sing Hallel. We sang Oz Yashir. Maybe there's something different to the theme of Oz Yashir than there is to Hallel. The Hallel might not be appropriate, but Oz Yashir would be. So there's different answers given, and well, God willing, this is a good Monday night topic for another time. All right, Yashar Koach, everyone. If I don't see you beforehand, wishing you all a Chag Kosher v'Sameach.
Bye, everybody.
Have a good Yom Tov.
When I get back, have a wonderful holiday, everyone.
All right, take care.
Bye, everybody.